Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Just for it. Thanks, Devon, man.
And it's Monday morning. You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and I have a very important and valuable guest. And Doc, I'm going to butcher your name, so I do apologize. I'm chatting with Dr. Bodhi Chakraborty, and he is a plastic and reconstructive surgeon. Register, and we're going to be chatting burns. Winter is a season we associate with warmth, comfort, fires, heaters, coffee, hot meals, hot water bottles. But unfortunately, it's also the season where burns increase. Let us have your questions for our guest on 061-895-1019.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Thank you so much for joining us on this rather fresh Monday morning here in Johannesburg. Winter is always the time where we try to warm ourselves, but unfortunately, sometimes those warming techniques and methods carry very real risk. I'm chatting with Dr. Bodhi Chakraborty, and he is a plastic and reconstructive surgeon. Register. Doc, how did I do with the name?
It's probably the best I've had from someone who's never said it before. So well done on that.
Thank you. I'm famous worldwide for messing up names. So thank you.
That didn't happen today.
It's really wonderful to have you on the show. And I'd like to start off firstly by, let's chat about sort of the risk of burns at this time of year. Because, you know, we have hot water bottles, we have heaters, we have gas heaters, we have paraffin, all of these different things that we're bringing into our homes, into our bedrooms, electric blankets, and they all carry risk. How much do you see the rate of burns increasing at this time of year?
It's a drastic shift. I mean, we do see burns trickling in because obviously we do have a pretty impoverished society. So we do get the flame burns throughout the year for people who just use fire for cooking and staying warm. But during winter, like, our burns unit sees a massive spike. It gets to a point where we're normally at capacity throughout the whole of the winter season. Then you have to, unfortunately, tell smaller hospitals to manage these burn patients, which is kind of a travesty to some of these patients, because a lot of the patients that need referrals to burn units don't actually end up at a burn unit in South Africa.
Sure. And let's chat about your role so our listeners can get an understanding really what you do in terms of medicine and treating burn patients.
Okay, so with all things, it starts with the resuscitative role. So in plastics, we're not as involved, and that's normally done by the teams in trauma and emergency medicine. But sometimes we're also involved in the resuscitative phase. So essentially, a burn it's taking away your protective layers. So essentially, you're losing temperature, you're losing heat, and you're losing massive amounts of fluids through this exposed skin. So right. In that process, you lose a lot of fluids. So and obviously a lot of these patients also come in with inhalational burns and need airway protection. So the resuscitative role is in airway management. So if you have a flame burn, intubating the patient, protecting their airway. And then because they're losing so much fluid, then it's scrubbing down the burns and then getting good IV access, and then essentially pumping the patients full of fluid so that we compensate for the amount of fluids that they lose. So initially it starts as a resuscitative role. And then plastics is obviously involved in the reconstruction. So that starts from a lot of these more superficial burns heal by themselves, and we just watch and wait. And then we like the expert doctors in dressings. And then if it doesn't heal within a certain amount, so different parts of the body have different rates of healing. So at a certain point, if it's not healed, then the role is to go in and then ensure that you reconstruct. So whether that's a simple skin graft sometimes the burns are so extensive, you need to culture the skin next to the patient. But essentially, we want to cover that burn skin. And then we also are in a rehabilitative phase of the burns. So often the burns are healed, everything is covered, but then say it's over the hands, over the neck, or essentially any joints, and then you end up with contractures. And the plastic surgeon is involved in releasing these contractures and getting you back to as close to as a normal function as possible.
Okay. So I think just to go a little bit deeper into that for the listeners, you know, burn, dealing with a burn is not just really burn management, right? It's the trauma reconstruction, the skin grafting we touched on, but it's also the complex wound care. Hands must be incredibly complicated to deal with, facial reconstruction, scarring management, and the reconstructive process over years sometimes, because there's a lot more to burns than just the burn.
Absolutely.
Can we go into a little bit more of that detail? The hands must be one of the most challenging things to work on.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you asked, because I do have a special interest in hands. So we've had a number of patients where had severe flame burns to the hands or whatever burns it is. So essentially, it's really important in the actual, and that's why it's important for these patients to be managed at a burns unit with dedicated occupational therapists and physios are involved in the day-to-day rehab with these patients, because often people are managed in centers where they aren't experts in those roles, and then you end up with what is called a syndactyly. So if the hands aren't properly managed, they kind of fuse together and you have like a big wad of fingers, because the skin in between the fingers is burnt, and then essentially the fingers end up fused. And then you have to do this like complex reconstruction where you do a Z-plasty, which is like cutting at different angles. Essentially, it's like geometry to try and fill in those angles. And then whatever tissue is missing, then you always then take skin from an area that you can donate to then cover those. But then again, it's also these patients, because some people end up with fused joints from the burn, because the thing is, if you don't use, like if you've ever had your hand in a cast for two weeks and you come out, your hand feels like you've never used it before. Absolutely. So you have some people.
I just want to jump into, we've got a live read and we're going to go pay the rent. And then when we come back, I want to go into this a little bit more. So I think it's very important to understand.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Thank you so much for joining us here on the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show on 101.9 High FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and I'm chatting with Dr. Bordi Chakraborty, and we are talking burns. Doc, just before we went to the ad break, we were talking about hands. If we could pick that up, I think something that's absolutely terrifying for me is the concept of the fingers of the different joints fusing together as the hand heals.
Yeah. So essentially, like I was saying, if you can imagine being in a cast for 2 weeks and your hands are so stiff, so now say imagine 6 months of not using your hand. Those hands are essentially non-functional. So the role of trying to get those hands back to being as functional as possible is quite a mission. So essentially, sometimes the joints end up, the ligaments freeze up and become super stiff. So you have to go in, release the joints, release the tendons, do what's called a tenolysis. And then because they're fused in a certain way, essentially you have like a soft tissue deficiency, which means almost always when you're releasing these hands, they're going to end up with needing skin grafts as well. The problem with skin grafts is they also contract when they heal. So you're kind of on a knife's edge when you are treating these patients with these burn hands, between letting them heal and settle and between being aggressive enough that they get their function back.
If we look at the process, we touched on it earlier, that not all hospitals have the facilities or the staff to deal with burns in the way that they needed to be dealt with. If there is a burns hospital that doesn't have sort of the necessary care, process in terms of stabilizing, treating, dressing, and then trying to get them to a hospital. What sort of time frames are we looking at with the more severe, serious type of burns in terms of getting them in front of you?
So we ideally want them in 24 hours. So you have a critical window, and that's when the most patients end up. You kind of dictate the future of that burns patients in within the first 24 hours. So a burn has three zones. And basically, if you are able to resuscitate them adequately in the first 24 hours, you essentially change the outcome of the wound itself, because it's getting fluids, it's getting nutrients, it's getting all the white cells there. If they don't get the fluids in that time, it means the total percentage area of that burn is actually going to increase, sometimes up to double. So that's the issue, is getting the patients across within that first 24 hours. But that is the most critical period, because you literally dictate the entire outcome of that burn patient's journey.
Okay. And is that something similar almost to the effect of like frostbite, where tissue has died and then that dying tissue starts to spread?
So frostbite does have a, which is also a thermal injury, at least has with a much longer grace period. So frostbite, sometimes you can honestly leave it for a couple of months and let it demarcate and then take it from there. But similar concept. So with burns, however, it's within that, it's like you say, within that first hour, if you can, I mean, not first hour, within the first 24 hours, if you can adequately resuscitate the patient, you are downgrading the total percentage, because you obviously have an area, a central area that's the worst affected. And as you move away from the burn is less. So okay, resuscitating them decreases the peripheral edges of that burn from becoming the same as the central area. But if you don't okay treat it, then the central area essentially expands out, and that entire area becomes the burn that you're treating.
If we're looking at the different types of burns, and if you could touch on what are the different types of burns that people experience, the different levels, and also what are the common ones that you're seeing in South Africa?
Okay. So in terms of the different types of burns, so thermal, so that includes scald burns, so anything with hot, so hot liquid, hot oil, flame burns, which is steam burns, so, and even hot objects. We've had people burn themselves on irons and stoves and things like that. So by far the most common ones we see at home are thermal burns. And then on that same scale is technically frostbites, but I haven't seen a frostbite in South Africa. Then moving on, we have electrical burns. I'd say is the after thermal is the next biggest amounts of burn injuries that we see. Unfortunately, a lot of the patients that we see with electrical burns are people that are trying to steal copper wires. But obviously we treat them the same. But electrical burns are probably the most dangerous burns, because it also electrocutes the muscle and everything it goes through, and it has an entrance and exit points. So electrical burns are probably the most severe, in terms of you could only have your finger burnt, but you could end up with kidney failure, for example. Mm-hmm. Then we also have
because
chemical
there's damage
burns
through the whole body, right? Where
exactly
that current travels. Okay.
Yeah. So you have your entrance point and exit point, and anything in between that can get damaged. So you have, it can affect your heart. You can have an arrhythmia. You can have a heart block. And then because it's electrocuting your muscle, it's like cooking your muscle. Your muscle dies, and then that dead muscle goes into your blood system and injures your kidneys. So you have electrical burn patients that end up on dialysis and with renal failure. The next burn that we don't see too much of is chemical burns. So that's either anything from a strong acid to a strong alkali, and that's often cleaning agents that we see. But luckily, I think now a lot of our laws prevent these chemical agents from actually being directly corrosive, so that more so than in industrial areas. And then just to touch on that, so if you are burnt with an acid or an alkali, you rinse it off with water. Just a quick tidbit. You don't, if you have an acid, don't then say, I must go find an alkali or an acid to neutralize. That actually makes it far worse. It causes a chemical reaction. Yeah.
Okay. And that's actually vital. I think, Doc, if we could just touch on that. How valuable is cold running water in terms of treating a burn, from minor through to something more serious?
So I think for more minor ones, so the first thing always is to remove the insulting agents. So if you're in a fire, if there's a hot stove, obviously your body's reflex is to pull away, but sometimes in elderly and younger patients, they're put into hot water and then they're not removed directly. So the first thing is always remove the insulting agents. Then regardless of the severity, always run it under cool running water for 20 minutes at least. But I would also say that the main thing is, like I said, you lose a lot of heat, is to then also keep the patient or person warm. And if it's painful, if it's anything you're concerned about, seek help. So if you're at home and you're running, if you burn your finger, your hand or something, and you're running it under cool water, and after that period of time, you still feel like the pain is not in keeping with the wound, I would always suggest seeking out help. But
great advice. Okay, fantastic. And then moving back to our other types, so what are the common ones we're seeing in SA?
So flame scalds, I can tell you, hot water burns, for me personally, is probably the most common, especially because we also treat children. So in children, the scald burns are by far the most common. And then...
go ahead. Sorry, my apologies.
No, not at all. So scald burns in a pediatric population, and then thermal burns, so any flame burns. Again, I do think this is more in impoverished areas that we see the flame burns. And then in a more, I don't really see that many electrical burns, but then stoves and gases as well. So anything anything thermal related is by far the most common that we deal with in our burn centers.
Okay. With regards to the scald burn, so the hot water, hot fluid, are we seeing a lot of that sort of from cooking, kids walking up to the stove, lifting up the pot to see what's inside, getting burnt hot bath water? Are these also some of the burns that we're seeing?
That's exactly it. Those are all the causes of issues when it comes to the hot liquids. So, and also moms, I think sometimes with... again, more impoverished, where they are they're boiling the water first, and then the child either comes and puts their hand in, or I mean, sometimes it is negligence where they're pouring it into the bathtub and they don't check first, and then you do see a lot of cooking injuries as well with the hot oil. Yeah.
What are some of the safest or most effective ways to check water temperature? Remember, growing up, sort of they were said, you know, test it with your elbow, for example. But what would be safe for mom and then safe for the baby?
Yeah, so I would say it's a good question, because, I mean, not everyone has access to a thermometer or something where you're able to check the actual temperature. So I think a quick – so the elbow doesn't have much it's not super innovative in terms of nerves as opposed to your finger. So it's actually a pretty good idea to just dip in a quick dip of your elbow, even your finger – also just keeping your hand above the surface of the liquid sometimes is a good indicator in terms of how hot it really is. Those are basically the ones that we advise. Yeah.
So the rule of thumb would be that colder bath water is better than scalding hot bath water.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can always warm it up more. Yeah.
Absolutely. What are some of the challenges or the mistakes that South Africans are making that you see in terms of treating burns after they happen? I remember stories about put butter on the burn to cool it down, and, you know, these horrible stories.
Yeah. So anything like the butter, I've heard of, I've seen a lot of patients come in with toothpaste, some people with cooking oil, putting ice. So you'd think, okay, maybe ice actually makes sense, but then you're actually putting yourself at risk of frostbites. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that I would advise is run it under cool water and cover up. So, I mean, obviously in a home setting, it's difficult to say, get a sterile dressing. Mm-hmm. So the best thing to do is run it under cool water, and then anything, any clean surfaces you can put around, and then go and seek medical care to get the proper sterile dressings.
Doc, what should one do for those who are in poorer, more impoverished communities, perhaps, where they have water, maybe a bucket, but they don't have access to running water. Is putting your hand into a bucket of cold water better than, you know, sort of than not doing anything?
So it is a tricky issue in terms of, because you're going to check and then you're at risk of injuring yourself. So that's why you don't have to boil the water completely. So that's another thing, is sometimes I think people are more inclined to just boil it. So you see, I think until you're seeing the steam come up, I think that's a good kind of indicator that,
yes,
okay, it's getting hot now, because we don't shower or bathe ourselves in boiling water. It just has to be hot. So even, and then having cool water ready, which again is sometimes tricky, but instead of boiling your entire pot, boil half of it and leave the other half cool, so that if it is, you can just mix the two and then meet in the halfway.
That's great, great advice. We're chatting with Dr. Bordi Chakraborty, plastic and reconstructive surgeon. We are talking about burns and burn risks. Let us have your questions for our guest on 061-895-1019. Doc, one of the things that I also wanted to look at is, what is the risk of infection? So even if it's a minor burn, but if there's skin open, if there's a blister, what should we be doing to keep ourselves safe?
So if you have, say, a blister, that's actually in itself a sterile environment for the burn. So some places do advise popping the blister and letting the... if you are going to do that, then you need to do a sterile dressing. But in terms of... So a burn is not infected, at least for the first 48 to 72 hours. It only gets infected after that if it hasn't had appropriate wound care. You do not need oral or antibiotics for burns. That's also a misconception. If a wound is becoming infected, it means it needs to be cleaned. You don't run to a GP or someone to get oral antibiotics. It's actually not going to do you much good.
Right. So I think that's a standard response for many people.
Yeah.
Going to get the antibiotics, as you said, not necessary. If we look at sort of electric blankets, heaters, are we seeing a risk of those with burns, or has that decreased with the improvement of sort of the electronic management systems in these devices?
Yeah, it's definitely a lot less than what it used to be. You still do see it every now and then, and it's more so in people that have maybe like poor connections to the, like people that were taking chances, maybe with older ones or ones that weren't working properly. But I haven't seen an electrical blanket injury. I mean, it obviously does happen and it's very anecdotal. But for me personally, I feel like it is definitely reduced with improvements in technology.
Okay, fantastic. But going back to the old school way, hot water bottles, are we seeing injuries from this? I'm thinking particularly perhaps with older members of our community. And how should we be boiling the water before we put it into the hot water bottle? What advice do you have around hot water bottle use?
Sure. We do see it. Luckily, it's not as bad as you think. And it's also because it's like a small amount of water. Mm-hmm. And you're pouring, and normally it's when you're pouring it in that some people burn their hands. The thing is, things that you can do is like keep a cool towel around the tip while you're pouring it in. Again, same thing. You don't have to boil. If you are going to boil the entire kettle, pour a bit of cold water into the hot water bottle first, then pour in. And you also don't need to fill hot water bottles. I think some people also tend to overfill them, and then it leaks out the top, or then they don't screw in properly, and then you end up almost like not popping it, but it overflows out, and then you get that. Again, the same thing with the flame burns, and even in impoverished areas, the thing is you don't have to boil it all the way through. I personally use one, and I normally cut it halfway, and it's more than enough.
Okay, that's absolutely great advice. It's just really, I suppose, thinking of worst case scenario when you're putting in the water or when you're dealing with bath water or anything with liquids that we do on a regular basis, you know, what's the worst that can happen? And let me just be mindful of that. We are chatting with Dr. Brody Chakraborty and plastic and reconstructive surgeon. Let us have your questions for our guest on 061-895-1019. You are listening to the Disco Medical Monday show here on 101.9 High FM.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dischem. Better health starts here.
Thank you so much for being with us on this chilly morning. We're chatting burns with Dr. Brody Chakraborty, and hopefully the conversation is keeping you warm and informing you to keep you safe. Doc, how dangerous is smoke inhalation as an injury, and are people potentially at risk of getting smoke inhalation with some damage and not realizing that they need to get medical attention?
Absolutely. Smoke inhalation is one of the more, it is an emergency. And if not recognized early enough, can kill someone. Normally, I will say though, it's normally in an enclosed space. So it's people who are in indoor fires where the smoke doesn't have an outlet. So I would say if you're outdoors and you're having like a bushfire or a briar, you're probably not at risk. You shouldn't be inhaling that anyways, just in general, because of all the chemicals. But if you are in an enclosed environment and you inhale smoke, it can kill you. So essentially, it burns your nasal hair, all the mucosal lining, and how your body reacts to any sort of irritants and any sort of damage is by swelling, by inflammation. So that can swell up to such a point where you can no longer breathe and you can't maintain your own airway. And that is potentially life-threatening. So to the general public, I don't feel it's as, it is of concern. And if you find yourself in an enclosed space and there's a fire, make sure to run, get out to fresh air. Avoid indoor fires. But yes, it is a significant threat, but I think for the most part, the general public should be safe from it. And it isn't as bad, like I said, if you're outdoors. Yeah.
I suppose on a lighter note, Doc, the real question is, why is it whichever side of the fire or the briar that I sit on does the smoke come? Explain that to me. Doesn't matter where I'm sitting. Yeah. And I don't think it's just me, Doc. Yeah.
So I think there's a law.
Yeah, it's the law of nature. If we go look back at the role of the plastic and reconstructive surgeon that plays that you play in burn treatment, if we could go a little bit deeper into that. And then also, what in essence is skin grafting? When is it needed? And, you know, a question from my side: can you only graft your own skin, or can skin be donated?
Okay, no, great question. So skin graft is essentially taking skin. So there's two types of skin graft. So it's split thickness and full thickness. So a split thickness is when you use a machine called a dermatome. Back in the day, they used to use a knife, like a big butcher's knife almost, and it was to shave off the top layer of your, which kind of circles back to first degree, second degree, and third degree burns. So that tells, all that is telling you is which layers of the skin are involved in the burn. So like a sunburn is a superficial burn, so that's a first degree burn. Your epidermis is just a little bit injured, but it's intact. Then you have your second degree, which is deep and superficial and deep partial thickness. So it means your epidermis has lost most of its layers, but your dermis is still pretty much intact. And then your third degree, which is your full thickness burns, which is anything that burns through the dermis all the way down to bone. Right. So essentially, it all depends on what is missing. So if you have a partial thickness burn, it means your epidermis is still intact. I mean, well, parts of your epidermis and parts of your dermis that have regenerative capabilities. So you have people that have deep burns, but your skin regrows, it just grows a different color. The moment you're entering the territory of a deep partial thickness to full thickness burns means you need to go in, debride those burns, and then what is left needs to be covered with skin. So if it's a large area, you will take a split thickness skin graft, which is when you use the machine to take a strip of skin. You then can mesh it. It almost looks like a fishnet stocking, which all it's doing is if I take 1 centimeter, or, you know, if I'm taking it's 10 centimeters, if you mesh it in a certain way, it means I can get up to 40 centimeters of skin from a much smaller amount of skin, but it then ends up not looking as nice. Mm-hmm. Then you also have cosmetically sensitive areas where you can't put split skin like that, and you end up taking full thickness skin, which then you take from an area that would match that area that you need to take that skin. So essentially a full thickness skin graft is you're cutting out that entire layer of skin, including the dermis, which means that where you're taking the skin from needs to be closed primarily. As opposed with the split thickness graft, when you're taking that entire sheet of skin, that skin grows back by itself. Again, albeit it's a different color. So really it depends on what burn you have, where you have it, and how bad it is. It will dictate what sort of skin graft you need. And then to answer the question about, do you only use your own skin? Most of the time, yes. And ideally, because like with all things, rejection is possible. So if it's from you, you cannot reject it. If it's from someone else, it can be rejected. So examples of where we use other people's skin is mostly in pediatrics, because these are small babies that don't have a lot of skin readily available for them, especially if it's, you know, more than 25% of their skin that is burnt. So with these babies, what we do is you can use cadaver, so donated cadaver skin, to cover just in the interim while you allow. So you will patch one area from their own skin, cover the rest using donated skin, and then once they've healed a little bit more, that cadaver skin essentially buys you 2 to 3 weeks to get skin from somewhere else. So you also have, yeah, sorry.
Go ahead.
You also have xenograft, which is where you use animal donated tissue, or it's bioengineered tissue from different animals, sharks, cows, pigs, things like that, that again give you a layer of skin. And again, it buys you time. Sometimes the burns are so bad that you have tendons exposed and bones exposed. So these tissues then cover those, and then on top of that, you can apply skin. So ideally your own skin, but sometimes in certain situations, you can use animal or human donated skin.
Doc, that's absolutely incredible. We're just going to pay the rent. When we come back, you know, I would love to be able to chat to you on this for a few more hours, because I think the psychological effects of the burns can last as long, you know, as the healing process. But what I'm hearing from you is that you know, that there's time to heal, time to recover. There are all of these processes in place to buy time, to give the body the chance to heal and recover. When we're back from the from paying the rent, I'd love to get your thoughts on that. And then just as we wrap up the show, what advice would you have for our listeners? Are you looking to reach and engage a loyal audience? There's no better place to do it than right here on Chai FM. Our listeners tune in every day for music, conversation, and news they can trust. When you advertise on Chai FM, you're not buying airtime. You are becoming part of a community that genuinely listens. Whether you're a small business or an established brand, we'd love to have a conversation about how we can work together. WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. That's 061-895-1019. Or email us on info@chaifm.com, and we'll reach out to you. Chai FM, part of your everyday, every day.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Doc, just as we start to wrap up the show, please tell us sort of the process that is available. There is definitely hope for those who have suffered burns, and they shouldn't lose that hope. Please, if you could touch on that a little bit. And then just as we wrap up, what advice do you have for our listeners?
But yeah, so as you said earlier, burns is like it is a deeply psychological issue on top of being a physical ailment. And that's our job as plastic reconstructive and restorative surgeons, that there is hope. There is always options. The body is an incredible, incredible gift. And it has, there are many ways to bypass the injuries that you have. So regardless of whether the burn is acute or you are 6 months down the line and you have a contracture or some sort of scar that you're not happy with, there are many advances in plastic surgery that can get you back to maybe not normal, but always as close to near normal as possible. And it is also a patient and it's a chronic injury. So a burn injury affects your metabolism up to 2 years later. Some of these patients still have elevated heart rates from the metabolic damage that burns do. So it's not a quick fix. It's something that takes time. And as the doctors treating it, we are, it's our duty also to be in it with the patients for the long run.
Absolutely fantastic advice there. Don't give up hope. And then, Doc, just a last thought as we wrap up for our listeners, please.
Sure. It's just to be cognizant. It's, I think we always, it's how do all accidents happen? Is any lapse of concentration or judgment? And we just take things for granted. So for me, my only thing is just try and be a little bit more cognizant. It can save you an entire lifetime of misery.
Absolutely great advice there from Dr. Bordi Chakraborty, and he is a plastic and reconstructive surgery register. You've been listening to the Disc and Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. Doc, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for what you've shared to our wonderful listeners. Thank you for joining. I'm Nicholas Ingle, and I'll chat with you next week.